Hi everybody, and welcome to the Elevate Performance Podcast. This podcast is the second in a two-part special recorded in collaboration with Victoria Hamilton from Orange Falcon Consulting. She joins Miranda Kane, Managing Director for Elevate, and Lee Jones, Sales Director for Elevate. Our topic for the day? Customer experience post-COVID-19. If you missed part one of our podcast, you can still get it on Spotify and other popular podcast platforms. If you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on social media where you'll get more free content as and when it's created. We really appreciate your support. Now, without further ado, we'll jump straight back into the debate with our panel with another question. We find ourselves in a world with conflicting strategic priorities. How would you convince organisations that CX should still be high on their agenda?
So the first would be, I work with other colleagues on Anglian Water. Anglian Water were floating, they were always in the top five in the Ofwat SIM table, but they were never quite getting number one. Wessex Water were always top spot in the water table. And essentially what they wanted to do is get to number one. They realized that they had to do something quite different. And in the water industry, we've worked with a few water companies. They tend to be very siloed. And this is to the point we were talking about earlier, in the way that they deliver service. They've got a director for that function, director for that function, director for that function. Plus, there is no bigger contractor kind of presence as in utilities. Yeah. So, you know, if you're running clean water, you've got 10 contractors. If you're running wastewater, you've got 10 contractors. And the network itself is a mammoth to uphold. So what they did is went, okay, well, rather than just bring in a consultancy or a training company, just develop that function or that function, we've got to do this organizational wide. And to do it organizational wide means we take accountability as leaders to make that happen. Because otherwise, you'll always be acting in silos. And so what happened was, before we even touched any of the frontline teams, you had to do some work at the leadership level. And you had to get them working as a team and taking accountability that success and failure sits with them. So there was a massive investment in time before they did any training. And you know, one of the side messages in that is in realizing that you have to invest in your people. And that can be deemed by some organizations as a cost. And some people see it as a financial return. So let's fast forward. They've now been top of the SIM table for the last 18 months. Now, Ofwat penalize or reward you based on your placings on the SIM table. So they are now commercially better off as a result of investing in their people and driving more join up across their functions. So if you now deal with Anglian Water, you will speak to a contact center agent. You then might get a repair and maintenance engineer to your house. It will be like the two came together in that customer experience, because they take accountability for the handover of the customer experience as well as the individual bits. So that leadership accountability has now manifested itself down into the frontline teams. You can only do that when you really do it properly. The second, I suppose, thing that really struck me from a program we delivered was in the water industry, but it was with a contractor, and it was with J Brown Construction. So these guys are out changing your water meters in the street. They're civil engineers. These guys have a tough job in all weather, you know, out in the street, replacing parts outside your home. And what they did is they were looking at the complaints data and said, how do we improve this complaints data? And what they've never done is gone out and actually observed for themselves what happens on the street. You've got people that sat behind desks looking at continual improvement, and then you've got field engineers. And it wasn't until we kind of got those two teams working together that the answer became apparent. And it was really simple stuff like knocking on the customer's door when you're going to go for your break and saying, just to let you know, I'm going to be away for 10 minutes. Here's my number if you need anything. Rather than what happens is you open your curtain, you see, where's the engineer gone? And you automatically think they're on the phone or they're having a cigarette or they're doing something. They could be going to get a part and they could be adding value. But unless you speak to your customer constantly, and this is a new thing for civil engineering and construction, is, you know, health and safety has been their life for 30 years. Customer experience hasn't been. But we all know how annoyed we get when there's an inconvenience in our street or outside our house when we don't get communicated to. Yeah. So it's about recognizing where roles come in contact with customers and you're not leveraging them. So that's where field and, you know, typically we sit customer service with customer contact centers.
Yeah.
And we don't think that we can enhance it through some workforce that are based in the field that might not typically speak to customers. So I know there's quite a lot in there, but I think there's some good examples of a change of mentality that isn't always obvious to some organizations.
I mean, there's a saying, customer service isn't a function, it's an ethos and it's a mindset that should be replicated and embraced regardless of the functional area of the business that you happen to work in. And, you know, I guess they're easy words to say, but in practice can be quite a challenge for organizations to really create a culture with that shared sense of customer ownership. Somewhere I saw that be done particularly well was when I worked at O2. So I worked at O2 2004 to 2010. So a really exciting period of change. You know, the first iPhone was launched, 2007. And look at the rate of technical adoption that's really followed since then. But O2 at that time was absolutely joined up across the business in terms of the ownership of the customer experience and really understanding customer journeys and customer touch points through different parts of the organization. It was also very clear on the fact that happy people equals happy customers. So it absolutely brought into that culture of creating an environment where you create a workforce that are fans of the business, who in turn create a customer base who are fans of the products and services that you provide. And I think the fact that it was consistent focus from the top down, it was built into people's goals and objectives and performance measures, regardless of the function that you sat on. And I thought that, you know, that was a really exciting place to work at that time because it was just so joined up and seamless across the business. But you do sort of ask yourself the question, why wouldn't you focus on customer experience now? Every single business, regardless of the sector you work in, exists for its customers. And if you don't have customers, you don't have a business. And I think we live in a world where products and services can be increasingly replicated and homogenized. So actually the how you do things with your people and with your customers, in my mind, is really your opportunity to create your USP and really distinguish yourself in your marketplace.
So something you just said that really interests me there, and it goes back to the example I just gave around everybody should be involved in customer experience. I think the only way you can get that is when different roles within an organization understand the other roles in the organization. Mm-hmm. And if I give an example of when we were working with Anglian and actually worked with Thames Water, we had the same challenge. It's easy to blame another function when you don't appreciate the role that they do, because all you do, and it's human nature, is we focus on the negatives. So if we've handed over to that contractor and that contractor once messed up a job that I was working on, I have a belief and a bias that that contractor messes up. Now, actually, what was really crucial to the program that we did in both of those water companies is shine a light on the good stuff those departments do. And before you almost train or develop people is go, it's a limiting belief you have that it all goes wrong after you hand it over. What we need to do is allow you to see when it goes right, because only then can you change your mindset about the way that you deal with your customer and you hand them through the journey. And so what we were able to do is to get people from going, I'm really sorry, they're probably going to take about 4 days to get back to you, and all they'll be able to do is, and it's all negative language, is able to go, I've got a great colleague who's going to pick this up from now, and they're going to be with you, and they know exactly what to do in this situation. Same scenario, I'm handing a customer off, but my language is different because my mindset's different. And I think you can tell stories to help people change their mindset.
Yeah.
But that only comes when the leaders role model it, because otherwise you get negativity down through the organization. So I think that where Anglian Water got it right is they started making sure they took accountability for those messages through the business and kept it going. So I think you're right. You can only do it though when you focus on the mindset of people within the organization.
And it's about consistently showing up. So it's the role modeling piece, but you know, so many organizations, I think, I mean, most organizations these days have some sort of you know, manifesto that puts the customer at the heart of the organization, because there's certain, you see, you know, from decade to decade, certain rhetoric that becomes adopted by all. So if you go onto a website, what that organization will say about itself and what it stands for, and what it believes. And if you think about, you know, values became very trendy. And so organizations invest a lot of time in terms of defining their values. But there's often been a quite a distinct disconnect between, it's a what they say, what the you say you do gap. And so what we profess to what actually is the experience. And for me, fabulous if organizations today are looking, saying, actually, the world has changed and we need to make sure that we can still provide our customers with the best possible experience they can have right now. And most customers will accept that. And if that's not quite as good as it was in the past, for now, most customers will accept that. If it's as good as it reasonably can be. I think the problem is what organizations aren't doing is then getting clear about what it takes for that to translate. So unless you create a permission culture, so unless you clear the path, unless you empower your employees in the moment to just make a decision because it will massively impact positively the outcome for that customer, then actually nothing changes. So whatever your mandate, it's got to then be reflected in the work that you do with your teams, but that's got to be reinforced on a daily basis. So sometimes that means somebody's got to be, you know, an advisor's got to be acknowledged and rewarded for making a decision that may have sat outside of process, but was the right thing for that customer. And, you know, so the sort of auditing team, the QA team have got to be, you know, there's got to be a filtering of that stuff that says, okay, so that was outside the process. So in normal circumstances, they're going to fail. But actually, that was the right thing to do in that set of circumstances. And that's what we need to be focused on. And I think that you're seeing more organizations focusing on output because they have to, because you haven't got managers that are looking over the shoulder of all of their team day to day to see the actions that are being taken. So they're having to move to a more output focused sort of approach and lens. And that's the right thing in the sense of saying, if that customer is coming back and saying, you know, speaking to John, that was amazing. I was having a really difficult time and he made it really easy for me. And I got where I, you know, the outcome that I needed to get. And, you know, he was amazing. Then whether he adhered to, you know, a prescriptive set of processes should largely be irrelevant. But it that takes a bravery on behalf of an organization. Because huge accountability comes with creating that permission.
I think that's really topical at the minute because I've been talking a lot lately about, as we see organisations that take cost out of their business and redundancies, do you automatically go, right, I've got to get me cost line below me revenue line, and therefore what you do is you put workforce at risk. Mm-hmm. If you listen to your customer and you listen to your people, not being naive to say you can't right-size your business, but are you right-sizing them in the right places? So I worked with an organization where they had 35 people in their quality function, yeah. And they were measuring the wrong things.
Yeah.
They were measuring, were you saying sorry and were you using the customer's name? And if not, and they were doing compliance fails. 35 people managing a UK-wide utilities company. Now, I'm not suggesting they should not use those 35 people, but they were using them for the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So if you want to take cost out of your business, you get efficiency by using them on the right things.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, what we tend to do is reduce your customer service base and, you know, take 20 heads at your contact center.
Yeah.
So I think if you truly know what the outputs are and have worked out what makes a difference with customers, then it informs your right sizing decisions better.
Well, I saw a really interesting report recently on LinkedIn by Bain Consulting, which was looking at the gap between organizational leaders' perception of the superiority of the service they delivered to customers. So 80% of leaders felt they delivered a superior customer service. And then their customers were surveyed And surprise, surprise, the customer feedback was actually 20% felt that the same businesses were delivering that superior service. So it shows you the massive disconnect that there is there in terms of organizations' perceptions of how they're performing in the customer's eyes, and then the actual voice of the customer telling quite a different story. And I find that really very interesting because, you know, we were talking earlier about all the different customer satisfaction surveys and opportunities to understand the customer experience at different parts in the journey. And it calls into question, are organizations measuring the right things, or are they measuring what they can measure and what they've been comfortable measuring in the past? And, you know, this comes full circle to what we were saying earlier on, that now I think is really the time for businesses to really relearn, really pin back their ears and really listen to what customers want from their business, from their products and from their services. And then to really ensure that the measurements that you have in place are tying into those moments of truth, so you don't then have that disconnect between what you think you're doing and what your customers then subsequently tell you you are doing, and you see that big gap transpire.
And I think you're absolutely right. And actually, decisions that are being made are only going to compound those issues. So, you know, if you reduce the size of a team, then actually there is an obvious requirement that the remaining team do more. So you've still got to take the same number of calls, but across less people. Yeah. So the focus becomes, for example, around average, average handling time on calls. So you're then even further, because you can't have people spending too long on the phone, but that immediately tracks from the ability to just do what's right in the moment for a particular customer, when you're fearful of if you exceed the required metrics, what are the ramifications of that? So I think it's that, to your point, you know, it's that disconnect in terms of what we profess to want to be the experience of customers, yet what we're prepared to allow or concede or take a different view on. I think all too often we're measuring the wrong things.
But right now is a time where every day you see, you know, we're very early in an economic downturn, and every day you're seeing redundancies in the news and in the papers, and it feels like those decisions are getting made reactively. I mean, if this is very topical right now, but if you think to the start of lockdown, just before the furlough scheme came out, the amount of businesses that were rushing to get redundancies out before the furlough scheme kicked in, so they just got them off the books, says that they haven't done all the things that we do, which is listening to your customers, listening to your employees, that can help you navigate these tough times, help you survive, grow. Because if an organization should always think that their customer might change, their market might change, demand supply might change. So you always have to be listening to people. And if you are listening to your people and your customers tapped into that at all times, you've always got your answer. Mm-hmm. And so what you're seeing at the moment is, I think it's very evident, the organizations that haven't got their finger on the pulse, because the ones react quick. And actually, there's some organizations that haven't made redundancies, still in the same sectors of other businesses that have. And these companies are the ones that keep appearing on the top of the ICS rankings, and the ones that you know are renowned for good service. And it's because they have their finger on the pulse, and that they've got the answer about how they drive revenue up or control their cost, as opposed to quickly get the cost out.
There's so many kind of interwoven factors here for me, because I think there's also, you know, what this the last 6 months has also shown is those organizations that were poorly run leading up to this point. So, you know, were huge organizations that immediately were in big trouble, because actually what they hadn't done, I think it shone a light on their lack of reserves, right? So they didn't come into the crisis with, a buffer of, you know, a number of years of, diligent commercial sort of planning and spending and all of those things. And so they very quickly went to we have to reduce cost. And, you know, to your point, I think that so many of those decisions were made so quickly, they couldn't conceivably have been absolutely sure that they were taking the cost from the right place. But also, I think that they didn't invest the time and energy looking at actually, was that really what they needed to do? Because actually, at some point, any business's answer has to be to sell its way out, right? It will have to bring, you can, you know, driving costs down is largely short term. At some point, there will be an expectation that that business returns to its, you know, historic size. And at which point, so they've got another wave of a problem coming, because when they then are looking to grow, to regrow, they're going to be bringing in brand new people. And so, you know, that impacts productivity in the short term, certainly. So I think that there's, you know, this is the first of a number of waves that varying organizations are going to feel the impact of decisions, I think, made in haste.
And I think you can sell yourself back to revenue return, mm-hmm. but you can't fix a culture no. and a climate that you ruined through that process. So mm-hmm. people that just had a crap experience are now looking to leave, you know, yep. high attrition, low discretionary effort. So the important, we talked a lot about customer experience, you know, the employee experience is crucial through those times.
Well, if you think about when the world opens up again and people can get on planes, there's a particular airline that's not had a particularly good time of things recently. And I wonder whether they will, I've read many things that says the impacts of decisions made today will be felt by organisations for a decade and more. And some of them, when they're saying, right, we're, you know, the world is getting back to normal and we can fly anywhere now, we're now recruiting. For how many people is that an aspirational organisation? So that's, you know, again, I think they're going to be looking around and finding that people aren't climbing over themselves to go and work for particular companies in a way that they perhaps once would.
Or the employment market might say, I'm taking it because it's our job.
Yes.
Not because I'm, like to your point, aspirationally, I want to be in that place.
Well, what about further attrition from organisations right now? So, you know, many organisations have had people on furlough, subsequently made large-scale redundancies. How many of those people that manage to hang on to a job when the market picks back up may make a different decision, because the fact that they stayed was more through necessity, or, you know, actually, you know, their circumstances meant right now it wasn't the time to sort of move on. So they did everything they could to cling on to a job. But that doesn't mean that they look at that organization and think that they did the right things, or that they necessarily treated their people well. And so I think, again, organizations still have a price to pay from existing employees when the market is, is buoyant again.
I think it's going to be really interesting just to see the impact on organizational culture in the aftermath of 5-6 months of large swathes of team working remotely, working from home, some really embracing that and adjusting to that well. Other people, you know, maybe prefer some of the, opportunities to interact and see people face to face in the workplace. But whatever individual preferences are, the fact remains that the notion of a place of work, I think, has really changed in recent months. And we talked a lot today about culture, you know, being that golden thread that's woven through all the different functions of an organisation. And I think this opportunity to really reset what your culture means going forward, when you're perhaps having to take a longer term view and a longer term approach on these new remote distributed ways of working. I think how that plays into your culture and how things get done in this business. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what the longer term ramifications and opportunities are in that space.
I've got an interesting story. So this kind of makes me think about a bit of work I've been doing recently. I've been doing some sort of mystery shopping in retail, because mentioned earlier, I'm quite passionate about this point of develop your people, not treat them as a cost, but treat them as an asset. And I think retail has a massive opportunity right now. And so I want to kind of tell a story about when I went out into the high street and I did a lot of mystery shopping in different shops, because I wanted to see what kind of experience I got. And it also brings this kind of point. We keep talking about service, and we talked earlier about retentions and sales functions. For me, service and sales are the same thing. So long gone are the days where you can miss sell to people. You know, selling is about problem finding, service is about problem solving and reacting to the problem you've been given. But so for me, retail is massive opportunity at the moment, because people aren't going to stop shopping on the high street. Yes, their market has changed. People are shopping online. But I've got this big belief that there are some retailers out there that are giving an experience that means that your digital technology is an enhancement to your shopping experience. We've been hearing from retailers for years that they're at the mercy, you know, of digital experience, online shopping, and footfalls down. Well, right now, people want to get out and have a shopping experience. And I went out into the high street and I walked into shops, and tend to be the department stores or high value retail, less of the sort of clothing and smaller retailers. And I had about 35 different experiences, and I had two really positive ones. And I really, you know, my heart was sunken by the end of the day, and I had these two great experiences at the end of the day. I had everything from no retail advisors in the shop. So I would walk in and I had some real life problems to solve. I've got some house DIY to do. I need to buy a new bed. I want to buy a new sofa. You know, I've got things I need to buy. And I walked into some stores and I was just overwhelmed with product. So I was just, I can't find what I'm looking for. I walked out, no one to help. Yeah. Then I had the experience where people go, how can I help you today? I ask them a question. They couldn't solve my problem. So they don't have the knowledge. So what's the point in the question?
Yeah.
I mean, I even had one guy, he said, here's a leaflet. If you have any questions, ask me. But the reason he gave me a leaflet is because he can't answer my questions. I mean, you know, what's the point? So we've got assets in this business that we haven't utilized. And then it got better. You know, some people would ask some questions about what kind of sofa do I like? What kind of material would I like? That's good. And then just went, well, this one's nice. It's blue. You know, great. And it's not really solving my problem. And then I went into John Lewis. Now, John Lewis have recently announced redundancy, so I'm going to comment on the commercial situation of John Lewis. But we all know that they have been renowned for investing in their people and in their employee experience and customer experience. I walked into John Lewis. The moment I hit the carpet section, the lady was on me. Hey, how can I help? Do you just want to browse or do you want to ask me a question? And then I said, well, I want to replace some carpet in the playroom for my house. And she had me asking me questions. What do I like? Have you thought about this? Getting all the products on the floor, getting me to stand on them. She had underlay underneath them. I mean, the experience was really experiential. She knew her stuff. Mm. She asked me questions, what was important to me. And she was able to signpost and add value to my shopping experience. I then said, I think I might go and have a look at more colors online. So rather than go, okay, yes, and see that as a loss, what she did is got loads of product samples out the drawer, wrote the particular part of the site that I needed to go to, wrote the price, and wrote me things to look out for online. So basically then handed me the ability to go and have a great digital experience. Yeah. Now, I'm not now going to go and shop on somebody else's website, you know, go on Carpet Right or somewhere else, because she's now got me into an omni-channel experience. But she only got me there because she added so much value. I went into some of their carpet competitors and I was just basically left to my own to my own devices. And you know, it'd be luck whether I found the right product in those shops. So that is a long example, but it just goes to show that there are some people, some organizations that are getting it right in retail, because they have spent the years developing their people.
I think the retail sector has obviously, you know, it's gone through some unprecedented change, I think over a number of years, but particularly pronounced in recent months. And I think it's to your point there that the organizations are able to really recognize the different roles or different channels can play in supporting that wider customer experience are the ones who will flourish and prosper. I mean, you've seen a lot, B&Q, I know, was particularly busy during lockdown with people at home, not going on holidays, time to spend at home and do all their DIY. And I think they showed how people can shop online and then they can go to store and pick up in a safe environment. So they're still respecting all the social distancing and, you know, the rules that had to be obeyed. And I think it's been really interesting to see those retailers who've recognised the different roles and the different values that different parts of their kind of value chain can offer up. One of the retailers, I think it would be interesting to see what they're discussing just now, but I think Primark, you know, doesn't have any online presence. So all of its stores had to shut. And I think it's something like £650 million worth of revenue every month they lost out on because their physical stores just weren't open. And there was no alternative route for customers to explore to see how they could still fulfill their shopping needs with that particular retailer. So I believe Primark have looked into obviously their online presence, and there's concerns about the high rate of returns and the actual dilution of profitability that then triggers. But in my view, I think you need to be in it to win it. To not have a digital presence just now has left some businesses really exposed.
Well, I think it's, again, we shared last week and the week before, because we were talking at the beginning of this around both from a customer perspective and an employee perspective around the integrity of an organisation. We know that people like Dr. Martens actually are repaying their furlough funding. And, and actually they have more of an online presence than they do an in-store presence now. So they don't typically have their own stores, but they usually sort of have concessions within other stores, and actually saw a 40% increase in sales leading up to June this year. So I think you're right in terms of those that are out of step in terms of having an answer to in terms of the new world. But I loved their story as well, that said they share that success and then say, and actually what that means is we can't, I love the wording they use. They said it just doesn't feel right to keep the funding when actually we've seen really strong sales and therefore we're giving it back. And all of a sudden I go, I literally love Dr. Martens. And that's the impact of those. And I think ASOS was similar in terms of looking to return those. And then we see the other end of the spectrum, those that are not only exploiting the furlough scheme, but also then trying to further penalise furloughed employees by not paying them their full entitlement from a redundancy perspective. So I think that never has the consumer had more access to information that falls outside of just what I can expect as a customer. But one of my favourite sayings, I don't want to spend my money with dirty, rotten scoundrels. But it's that, isn't it? Uh-huh. And if that costs a little bit more to go and spend it with a company that you know can do right, I've genuinely looked for opportunities to go and spend money in Timpsons. So I don't have one locally, but I want to have keys cut, and I've got a couple of pairs of shoes that I need rehealed. And I will wait till I go to a town that has a Timpsons, because when COVID landed, they said from the outset, We all of our staff will be on full pay for as long as this lasts. And you just go, it just doesn't get any better than that. And they didn't know at that time whether they were signing up to 3 weeks or 3 months or 6 months, but they did right by their people. And they also have some other amazing stuff they do in terms of supporting wider kind of causes and things, which I love. But I will try and spend my money there ahead of anywhere else because I love what they're doing.
Well, so funnily enough, I'm smiling because I was just about to say Timpsons for me. Yeah. So B&Q actually incidentally did the same. They paid their, anybody who needed to be away from work on sick, they paid them full leave for as long as they needed to so that they protected their employees that way. But I was going to come to Timpsons as well because I wouldn't even look for anybody else to get my keys cut because of how Timpsons treated people through lockdown.
Yeah.
And I had to go and get a key cut last week.
Yeah.
So I went to Timpsons.
Yeah.
I didn't even look. Turns out I have a cobbler's and a key cut place in my local town.
Yeah.
But I went to the next town without looking because of how Timpsons have given themselves such great press.
Yeah.
So and that just shows you the value, doesn't it? That it's beyond the product and service that you physically offer, but it's that wider CSR lens almost that customers are really looking through and much more informed about, which means you're prepared to actually put that extra effort in as a customer to feel that you're engaged with a brand that is known for doing the right thing and makes you feel good about that interaction.
Is it no surprise that the service was absolutely brilliant?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As well. So you buy yourself some pretty decent people that want to work hard for you as well, as a result.
Yeah. You have that pride and the wider initiatives and activities that the business is involved in.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I was reading something over the weekend as well that says, you know, lots of large organisations are announcing, reviewing their sort of property infrastructure, and there's likely to be less, you know, more people will stay working from home, or at least part, you know, working from home part-time. And now there's talk, you know, for years we've talked about the demise of the high street. Now there's more talk around the demise of the sort of city centre locations. And it's a difficult one for me, because I live in a you know, a sort of more villagey location that has struggled in light of the large retail parks and busier towns and cities nearby. And actually, you're seeing those high streets more buoyant because people working from home. So I've been, you know, when I've been working, I'll go and pick up a sandwich or something for lunch from a local sandwich shop, which wouldn't have had my trade when I was based in an office in Guildford. And so I think it's going to be interesting. So for me to be talking about wanting to spend my money in Timpsons, where normally I would say I'd go to the little sort of independent. So it's a bit of a wrangle, isn't it? Because you want to support both. But I think when organisations make such a huge statement, and for those guys, that would have been 5 full months of every employee on full pay. And many of those employees would have not earned huge amounts of money. So they could have furloughed them without them being really negatively impacted financially. But actually, they still didn't. They just said, our job, we will look after our people. They've looked after us.
Mm-hmm. When you're having that wrangling around what to choose, the first thing you do is tick the ones off that you wouldn't deal with.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they've jumped out over the last 6 months.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Mm.
So thank you for sharing your views. If you had to summarise your key insight or takeaway for the audience, what would that be?
So I guess for me, it would be, it's a couple of things. You know, it feels in these sort of conversations, we talk a lot around things that we're seeing that we, you know, don't think are ideal and can feel quite critical. But I guess that leads for me to an automatic sort of call to action that says many organisations will now be in planning for 2021. And so I think I'd just be encouraging people to do that exploration. And that doesn't just mean, you know, a group of people within an organization sitting in a room and deciding what next year is going to look at. It means bringing in that expertise while there's still time. And it really links to, you know, the stuff we've already talked about that says, so let's make sure that what you say is your aspiration as a business, one, is realistic. So let's not make promises to customers moving forward that we can't keep to. And let's make sure that the setup in the organization supports that outcome. And let's do that in a planned way that means that we're going into 2021 with CX truly at the heart of the organization's thinking, and it's not too late. But the offshoots of that are huge for me, that says so it might change the view around the need to reduce certain team sizes, but take this time to make sure that you're sort of exploring all of the options before moving to the knee-jerk, obvious, reduced cost as well.
Yeah, my view's similar in that the companies that clearly have the answer right now and are surviving, growing, or reinventing themselves were already focused on the voice of their customer and the voice of their employee, and were very much in touch with that. And so at a time like now where they've got to come up with answers, they've got their finger on the pulse, but it's not too late. And so if you're not an organization or a leader that has typically listened to your people and looked to involve them in growing your business, then now is the time where you definitely need to do it. And it isn't too late to do it. And it should be your strategy for your long-term success. Because when you get the best out of your employee, you get the best out of your customer. So yeah, I'd kind of concur with that.
And I think for me, I think now is a time for businesses to really intentionally reflect on what's gone well, what's not gone well over the last few months. It's obviously been a period of rapid change and transformation, which in itself, I think, is a real success, the pace at which change has been able to deliver. And I think that's something that will continue. Change will become much more nimble, agile, lightweight, and businesses will be much more able to deal with the changes that they have to contend with. And I think for me, the biggest change has been the rate of adoption of digital technologies. I know we've talked about it through today's conversation. I believe it's accelerated at the pace of the equivalent of 10 years in the last 8 weeks, which just shows you the art of the possible when you know, you've got no other option but to pursue a digital agenda. But I think the real challenge for businesses will be really identifying and understanding that sweet spot of where it's appropriate to have digital tools and digital solutions and journeys for your customers versus really understanding those journeys which are perhaps catered more for customers in vulnerable situations where there is a greater requirement for empathy, for real listening, for real human to human interaction and connection. And I think once businesses are able to really understand and identify that sweet spot, and they can really have a successful operating model which plays to the strengths that the different channels have to offer. I mean, there's some interesting discussion just now about, you know, is it robots versus humans? And I don't actually buy into that mindset. I think each has their place and their role to play. Yeah. And I think they can absolutely complement each other by the automation, freeing up that capacity and allowing greater investment in your people to support your customers for the moments that matter. So I think that whole trend of digital adoption and acceleration is absolutely key, but critically it's finding that sweet spot and that perfect intersection of your human contact and support versus embracing the new digital tools and options that are available.
So I think that draws our podcast on customer service post-COVID-19 to a close. Thank you so much to Victoria Hamilton, our special guest, and of course Miranda and Lee. It's been a really good one today, and I think our listeners will agree without doubt. So on that note, to all of our lovely listeners, if you want to make sure that you don't miss any future content as and when it's produced, we'd love it if you'd follow us on social media or maybe sign up to our newsletter. Equally, for thought leaders who are listening, if you fancy collaborating with Elevate, we're always keen to have those conversations too. Until next time, stay safe and take care.